Fasten your seatbelts. It's going to be a bumpy night.
To infinity and beyond.
I just love finding new places to wear diamonds.
I could have been a contender. I could have been somebody.
There's no place like home.
Life was like a box of chocolates. You never know what you're going to get.
So it's that time again to go behind the scenes of another movie classic.
For God's sake, come in.
I'm coming in, aren't I? It's that stupid bleeding handle on the door. You want to get it fixed?
Yes. I meant to.
Well, that's no good, is it? Always meaning to. You want to get on with it, because one of these days you'll be sharp and come in and it'll go on forever, because the poor sod on the other side won't be able to get in and you won't be able to get out.
And you are...
I'm a what?
Huh?
What?
And you are. What is your name?
Me first name.
Well, that would at least constitute some sort of start, wouldn't it?
Rita.
Rita. Here we are. Rita. It says here, Mrs. S. White.
Oh, yes, that's S for Susan. That's just my real name. But I'm not a Susan anymore. I've changed my name to Rita. You know, after Rita Mae Brown?
No.
Rita Mae Brown, who wrote Ruby Fruit Jungle.
That's a scene from The Charming Educating Rita from 1983. It's the film that marked Julie Walters' first foray onto the big screen, starring there with Michael Caine. And to tell us all about it, television producer with Mind the Gap Films, Bill Hughes. Good morning, Bill.
Good morning, Pat. Yeah, this is such a gem. And when you think about it, Lewis Gilbert came to Dublin to make this film. And Lewis Gilbert at the time had made You Only Live Twice, The Spy Who Loved Me and Moonraker, like three big Bond movies. And here he was coming to make this tiny film on a budget of between 3 and 4 million in Dublin, in an indeterminate city, because they didn't want to say it was Liverpool. They didn't, and because the character of Julie Walters was going to an open university course, that it didn't matter where the city was. So they ended up converting some of Dublin into an English city, giving it this kind of... Like, people were shocked to walk down the street and discover a red pillar box somewhere, that because they were shooting wide scenes and it had to look like they were in the UK, the red pillar box for the post. And so little things like that just started to annoy people. But at the same time, people really welcomed it, because having Julie Walters on board, having Michael Caine on board, like, Michael Caine had a run of bad choices, bad movies, and he was getting really slagged off by the film critics and press, who really thought he was putting no effort into his career. And so when Lewis Gilbert was chasing the rights to the play by Willie Russell of Educating Rita, it transpired that the studio had other ideas. They wanted to move it to America and have it with Paul Newman and Dolly Parton, for goodness sake. So Lewis Gilbert brought it back to earth and got Willie Russell. I mean, Willie Russell was himself a hairdresser who made the play Educating Rita. It catapulted him into the mainstream of British theatre, because he ended up writing Blood Brothers and Shirley Valentine and, you know, had a lot of success. But Julie Walters was fresh from having played the part on stage, and she got the part once Michael Caine came on board. And Michael Caine decided to come into this tiny independent film because he thought it would prove that he still had the acting muscles. And the whole point was, this was to salvage his career. And by God, it really did, because,
there were good tax reasons for shooting in Dublin as well.
There were indeed, because... you know, in those days, the tax system in the UK was heavily against actors and people making big money. And the Charlie Haughey era had brought a tax break into Ireland for artists. And so there were people able to come and take advantage of that. But it wasn't even that. It was the fact that the film being shot in Dublin meant that Michael Caine and Lewis Gilbert would not have to pay the penal British tax. And so it became a sensible thing for him to come over, because you could multiply what he was getting in terms of not having to pay tax on it. It was worth an awful lot more money in the hand. So that was
now,
a good thing.
It's a charming movie. It's a very funny movie. The plot outline.
The plot is very simple. There's a woman called, who we just heard there, Susan, who had changed her name to Ruby. And she's a hairdresser, but she wants out of her ordinary life. She wants out of, she's in a marriage. She feels trapped. She's married to wonderful Irish actor Malcolm Douglas in the film. And he wants a child. She doesn't want a child. She thinks if she has the child, she'll be forever going to the pub and doing the ordinary things he's doing, but she has bigger dreams. And so she applies for an open university course and gets it. And the next thing, she is in Michael Caine's class because he is appointed as her professor. And so she shows up. The scene we just heard there was her showing up for the first time to go to a tutorial with this professor. And the whole ding-dong between the two of them, because over the course of the film, they both grow so much and they both learn so much from each other because they're both quite damaged people. And him in particular, because he has taken, like some people drew the parallel that here he was a professor who could no longer punch his weight. And so he had taken to the bottle in the way that Michael Caine, the actor, was no longer taking big roles and so was just settling for anything. So there was a whole parallel thing going on there.
Yeah. So you have the naivety, I suppose, of the Julie Walters character who doesn't really understand the level at which university operates. And you have this guy who's a bit patronizing because of this working class woman who comes into his life and thinks she can kind of compete academically. But it's the exchanges between the two. And we'll hear another scene. Explain this one, Bill.
In this one, you get a sense that Rita... Susan, whoever you want to call her, she has grown up on a diet of Pulp Fiction, and she has grown up on a diet of the potboiler sort of stuff, the Harold Robbins kind of stuff. And Michael Caine, as the tutor, is trying to grapple with her to get her to improve the level of literature that she's starting to digest. So here we go.
I love walking around this room.
Rita, don't you ever just come into a room and sit down?
I don't want to sit down. I love that lawn down there. All the proper students.
What? Oh, yeah, yes, yeah. Now, this essay you wrote for me.
It was crap.
No, no, the thing is, Rita, how the hell can you write an essay on E.M. Forster with almost total reference to Harold Robbins?
Well, you said bringing other authors. Reference to other works will impress the examiners, you said.
Yes, I said refer to other works, but I doubt if the examiner, God bless him, will have read Where Love Has Gone.
Well, that's his hard luck, isn't it?
Yes, and it'll be your hard luck when he fails your paper. Because that's what he would do if you wrote like this during an exam.
Oh, that's prime. Now there's justice for you. I get failed because I'm more well-read than the friggin' examiner.
Devouring Pulp Fiction is not being well read.
I thought reading was supposed to be good for one.
It is, but you have to be selective.
It's great stuff. It really is. How did it do critically and financially?
Oh, critically and financially, it was a massive success. Like, financially, it cost between 3 and 4 million, but it took five times that at the box office. So that made it a hit. But both Michael Caine and Julie Walters won the Golden Globe for their performance, won the BAFTA for their performance, got Academy Award nominations for their performance, and Willie Russell got nominated for the Oscar as well. He got nominated for each thing. He wasn't winning, but they were winning. And so it was really big for them. But it was a great boost to the Irish film industry at the time. It was a great boost to all the Irish actors who got to have parts in this, speaking parts, non-speaking parts, but like the roll call of Dervla Molloy and Jean Anne Crowley and Godfrey Quigley and Maeve Germain and Marcus O'Higgins and Alan Stanford, who has a gorgeous thing. Mary Conmee has one of the funniest cameos in it. Like, it's just wonderful stuff. And it's very, very rich, and it's really worth revisiting. They ran out of money, so they couldn't afford to put a proper score on it in terms of a full orchestra, because they had the score written. And in the end, they had to just put the synthesizer on it. And I have to say, that's the only thing that jars, is this use of a 1980s synthesizer instead of proper strings. It would be a different film in terms of, it would have been elevated if there was a beautifully rich and lush soundtrack. But we have to make do with the, you know, children's party type synthesizer, which is, it lets it down. But some of the critics, you know, they were, some of them were very accepting and loved the combination. But there was one, Janet Maslin in the New York Times. She said, the film is an awkward blend of intellectual pretension and cute, obvious humor, and the perfect play about literature for anyone who wouldn't dream of actually reading books. So that's really catty. That's just so, you know, whereas Variety said it's witty, it's down to earth, it's kind and loaded with common sense. And Empire said it was a gem, and that they make a beautifully odd couple in a love story at one remove. And then all the locations around the city are just fantastic, with Pier Street Station and Dublin Airport and the Stag's Head and Dame Court and Stony Batter and Ockram Street Church. Like, it's just everywhere around the city. So it's a real time capsule as well. Mm-hmm. So anybody Irish watching it would just fall in love with it, and fall in love with both of the characters.
Well, Ed, who's of a certain age, says, I don't think that Educating Rita is especially a good film, but I always have a soft spot for it because I appear in several scenes as an 18-year-old extra. So there you are, a student, no less. Bill, thank you very much for joining us. That's Bill Hughes, television producer with Mind the Gap Films.